From Montreal, Quebec, this is the Bard Brawl.
Yeah, that'd be really fun.
Do we know which speeches we're doing, or are we just chatting, or what are we?
We're chatting, we're doing speeches, and we'll...
All right.
Welcome to the Bard Brawl. We've taken a couple weeks off for final exams, for projects, for tiredness, for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, for everything.
For the end of the morning of what looked like the squishing of my abs.
Yes, but they rose from the ashes like the phoenix, and now they won that division. Because Boston just did not want to win it. Mm. Nobody wanted to win it, but unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess the Habs did it. We're back for the speeches podcast. The Bard Brawl, going pound for pound with Shakespeare, much like the Leafs and the Habs, who will not get to play each other, much to the chagrin of everybody in the planet, except for Habs and Leafs fans, who don't want to play each other. Because they know whoever loses.
All right. Yeah. Toronto gets to play Boston. Not a bad one of those two teams out.
Yeah. We're playing the Sharks, which is my favorite thing ever because it's Orca v. Shark, the ultimate sea battle. Speaking of going pound for pound, we thank all of you who tuned into any or all of the five acts of King Lear. It was super fun. We had a great time, and we were trying to figure out what speeches to do because there are just so many.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start with a question from listener Eric Fortan, who asks, is King Lear where the phrase tomfoolery came from? Because
Tom of Bedlam. Yeah.
Is that where tomfoolery comes from?
I'm going to say yes to Shakespeare, but I don't know about Lear. It has to be from Shakespeare. I can't.
Yeah, he picked it up. Eric picked it up, and he sent me a question asking that. So there you go. And if you listeners have any suggestions or you know the actual answer to that question, you're free to leave a comment too. The first request for a speech came from the tweet hashtag or tweet at mark at Everyday Shakespeare. And he said, anytime Lear does the tormented daddy bit, we always go with the ranting parent. Eric, can you think of a tormented daddy speech from King Lear?
Yes, there's an excellent one. Well, we want one where Lear is the tormented daddy, right?
Yeah.
Not Gloucester, the tormented daddy.
Well, I guess she doesn't say... Well, she does say Lear does his tormented daddy, because there are two tormented daddies.
Well, there's the scene where Lear gets rejected by his... I don't remember if this is... I think it's by both of the daughters. Where he showed up as one castle and... Basically, they said, well, you got to ditch some of your followers. And he wasn't too happy about having to do that. And they basically said, you know, what do you need any knights for? We're taking care of you, Dad. And then he goes into his, reason, not the need.
Yes.
Speech. Which
reason,
is,
not the need.
Oh, reason, not the need. Ah, here it is. Act 2.
Act 2.
Scene 4.
Act 2, scene 4. Reason, not the need.
Hear me, my lord, what need you 25, 10, or 5, to follow you in a house where twice so many have command to tend you?
What need one?
Oh, reason, not the need. Our basest beggars are in the poorest things superfluous. Allow not nature more than nature needs. Man's life is cheap as beasts. Thou art a lady, if only to go warm or gorgeous. Why nature needs not what the gorgeous wearest? Which scarcely keeps thee warm. But for true need, you, heavens, give me that patience, patience I need. You see me here, you gods, a poor old man, as full of grief as age, wretched in both. If it be you that stirs these daughters' hearts against their father, fool me not so much, to bear it tamely. Touch me with noble anger, and let not women's weapons water drop stain my man's cheeks. No, you unnatural hags! I will have such revenges on you both that all the world shall. I will do such things. What they are yet, I know not. But they shall be the terrors of the earth. You think I'll weep? No, I'll not weep. I have full cause of weeping, but this heart, storm and tempest, shall break into 100,000 flaws, or ere I'll weep. Oh, fool, I shall go mad.
So that was me, you, and Zoe Baldwin. I gotta say, I don't feel like I nailed that speech.
You made a redo. Might not have been. We don't do that.
We're cold reading this play. Sometimes I feel it's okay, and some are better than others. But, you know, like, especially Act 2, Scene 4, which is probably, I don't know what, 4 or 5 beers in?
Something like that.
And it's tricky, especially Lear, because he's always raging and going crazy.
Yeah, but it is between two opposites, right? Like, he's got a very rational speech, and then his sentences are stopped off as he says, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. But, like, so he's not, like, it's a tough speech to read.
Thanks.
Really tough.
Thanks, you made me feel better. So that was Act 2, Scene, or Act 4, Scene, or 2, Scene 4. Now we're going to ask another Twitter, who is at the Shakespeare Forum. He says, like us, there are so many. We would go with Gloucester or Kent. And yes, there are many. I would add to that, I like the one where Gloucester, anything with Gloucester, Edmund, and an extra bonus if Edgar's there. Is there anyone like that we can pull out?
Well, Edgar's not in this one. Not really in this one. He comes in right afterwards. But we've got Gloucester and Edmund, or Gloucester talking about how the weather and the astrological or astronomical events are the reason that all this horrible stuff is happening. And then when he leaves, Edmund, you know, tells us how he really feels.
Right. And this is, where do we find this?
This is in Act 1, Scene 2.
Act 1, Scene 2. So we have Gloucester, who I believe is you, and Edmund, who I believe was Jay Reed.
Jay Reed.
Yes. All right. Enjoy.
These late eclipses and the sun and moon pretend no good to us. Though the wisdom of nature can reason it thus and thus, thus nature finds itself encouraged, scourged by the subsequent events. Love cools, friendship falls off, brothers divide, in cities, mutinies, in countries, discord, in palaces, treasons, and the bond cracked twixt son and father. This villain of mine comes under the prediction. There's son against father. The king falls from bias of nature. There's father against child. We have seen the best of our time. Machinations, hollowness, treachery, and all ruinous disorder follow us disquietly to our graves. Find out this villain, Edmund. It shall lose thee nothing. Do it carefully. And the noble and true-hearted Kent banished. His offense, honesty. 'Tis strange.
Exit. This is the excellent foppery of the world, that when we are sick in fortune, often the surfeit of our own behavior, we make guilty of our disasters, the sun, the moon, and the stars, as if we were villains by necessity, fools by heavenly compulsion, knaves, thieves, and treachers, by spherical predominance, drunkards, liars, and adulterers, by an enforced obedience of planetary influence, and all that we are evil in, by a divine thrusting on, an admirable evasion of whoremaster man, to lay his goatish disposition to the charge of a star. My father compounded with my mother under the dragon's tail, and my nativity was under Ursa Major, so that it follows I am rough and lecherous. Tut! I should have been that I am, had the maidenless star in the firmament twinkled on my bastardizing.
Good, so that was Gloucester and Edmund talking about the stars, and if you're interested in a conversation more intellectual about King Lear's relationship with the weather and the planets, you can listen to the podcast we did where we discussed just that. Can you give us a 30-second summary of that sort of theme or that sort of discussion?
Yeah, 30 seconds. Lear and Gloucester are part of an old group, sort of a medieval thinking mindset that the stars, the heavens, the world mirrors human affairs. Edmund is an Edgar, sort of comes to learn from that. Is a representative of the idea that no human will directs our is responsible for our fortunes and our decisions. It isn't something that's written in the stars. Literally.
And it all plays out perfectly for everybody. In the end, everyone learns their lessons and they all become better people. By that, I mean they all die.
Yeah.
But
because they go to heaven and
become we didn't get to hear Edgar in that, so can you lead me into something with Edgar, played by the lovely Zoe Baldwin? Edgar, who became Tom of Bedlam, who may or may not be the base of tomfoolery.
I'm sure that Tom of Bedlam as a character is the basis for tomfoolery.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Shakespeare... If Tom of Bedlam is an old concept.
Right.
So I don't know if he's the one that maybe somewhere wrote tomfoolery.
Hmm. Okay.
We'll find it.
Let's lead into Crazy Tom and his crazy shenanigans.
Yeah. So like you said, Edgar, he is in disguise. He's trying to run away from Alistair and Edmund and Cornwall and everyone else is trying to kill him. And so he disguises himself as this mad beggar, Tom O'Bedlam.
Right. And where are we here in the play?
Act 3, Scene 4. So we're outside. Lear's been basically kicked out of his daughter's, or walked out of his daughter's keeping, whichever way you want to look at it. And now he's in the wilderness with Kent, the fool, and Edgar sort of runs into them, and they're all staying around this hovel.
Mm-hmm. This is me as Lear, Zoe as Edgar. You are the fool. Let's hear the fool bring us in.
All right.
All right.
Let's do that.
Let's do that.
Away, the foul fiend follows me. Through the sharp hawthorn blow the winds. Hum, go to thy bed and warm thee.
Didst thou give all to thy daughters? And art thou come to this?
Who gives anything to poor Tom, whom the foul fiend hath led through fire and through flame, through ford and whirlpool, or bog and quagmire, that hath laid knives under his pillow and halters in his pew, set rat's bane in his by his porridge, made him proud of heart, to ride on a bay trotting horse over four-inched bridges, to course his own shadow for a traitor? Bless thy five wits, Tom's a cold. Oh, doody, doody, doody. Bless thee from whirlwinds, star blasting, and taking. Do poor Tom some charity, whom the foul fiend vexes. There could I have him now, and there again, and there.
Has his daughters brought him to this pass? Couldst thou save nothing? Wouldst thou give him all?
Nay, he preserved a blanket, else we had been all shamed.
Now all the plagues that in the pendulous air hang faded o'er man's faults, let on thy daughters.
He hath no daughters, sir.
He's Zoe Baldwin, doing her flipperty-jippity, Tom's a cold, the blibbity-bloppity. She kind of upstaged everybody with that.
Why is she going away, Daniel?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to find someone to blame, and they're going to get it hard. Is there any madness, or is there any method to Tom's madness? Can you see anything in his lines, or is it just gibberish?
Well, it's gibberish, but a lot of it has to do with being haunted by demons and, like, pursued by these, sort of imaginary horrors, I guess.
Does he sort of act out the chaos and horrors of the time through this sort of funny way? Because all of this horrible stuff is going on around while he's kind of goofing around. There's this mock trial and all this kind of stuff. It's...
Yeah, I think so. And I think that Edgar tells us at some point in towards the end of Act 3, that he's actually finding it a hard role to play because he's walking around pretending to be crazy. But he's got to watch Lear go completely mad and put his daughters on trial and... Like, and you know, he sort of breaks character for a minute and speaks to us and tells us, like, you know, when we see the suffering of others. So, I don't know. I don't know how much he's mirroring that, but I after rereading Lear, I have a new respect for Edgar.
Yeah.
He didn't really like him before, but I have a new sort of appreciation for him.
That's what I like about this play is you read it through once, and the more you read it, the more you get out of it. So, you listeners... You should listen to the podcast over and over again, and you will get more and more. But
you might go more and more mad. I'm not guaranteeing that that won't happen. Mm. We're going into scene act 4 and 5 when people start dying tragically. Really, really intense things happen on stage. Mm-hmm. Also really charming things, but...
And also kind of funny things.
Yeah.
Sometimes, but... Yeah.
And some of the great, a lot of memes have focused on Shakespeare insults and how they're very funny because they sound goofy, which is the best kind of meme. Are there any insults in this play we should be paying attention to?
There are a lot. If you look at any exchanges between Kent and Oswald, you'll see that Kent has quite an extensive catalog of of insults. But because that is much more popular, we're actually going to share a little speech between, or an exchange between Albany and Goneril, where Goneril is trying to convince Albany to marshal his troops to defend against France, who's being led, the armies of France and Cordelia. But Albany is having sort of second thoughts about backing this sort of project because Goneril is evil. So he's decided. So she basically calls him out on it.
Albany is the one out of that camp that has a reversal and sort of redeems himself.
Yeah, he's Goneril's husband who has sort of second thoughts about what's going on.
So where is this one?
This is happening, I can't remember if this is happening at the castle, but it's happening at the camp. This
Act area. 4, scene...
Oh, Act 4, scene 2.
Act 4, scene 2. Yeah. All right, and... Goneril, I think this is Eric and Zoe, I believe.
Wisdom and goodness to the vile seem vile. Filth savor but themselves. What have you done? Tigers, not daughters. What have you performed? A father and a gracious aged man, whose reverence even the head lugged bear would lick. Most barbarous, most degenerate have you madded. Could you, my good brother, suffer you to do it? A man, a prince by him so benefited, if that the heavens do not their visible spirits send quickly down to tame these vile offences, it will come. Humanity must perforce prey on itself like monsters of the deep.
Milk-livered man, that bear'st a cheek for blows, a head for wrongs, who hast not in thy brows an eye discerning thine honour from thy suffering, that not knowest fools do those villains pity who are punished ere they have done their mischief. Where's thy drum? France spreads his banners in our noiseless land. With plumed helms thy state begins to threat, whilst thou, a mortal fool, sits still and cries, alack, why does he so?
See thyself, devil, proper deformity shows not in the fiend so horrid as in woman.
Thou vain fool!
Thou changed and self-covered thing, for shame! Bemonster not thy feature. Were't my fitness to let these hands obey my blood, they are apt enough to dislocate and tear thy flesh and bones. However, thou art a fiend, a woman's shape doth shield thee.
Marry your manhood, mew.
And then a messenger comes to tell him that Duke of Cornwall's dead. Interesting timing.
Yes.
One time, my
wife... Oh, and that Gloucester has been, you know, had his eyes...
And his head has his eyes... Intense.
Mm.
Has anyone ever said, marry your manhood mew to you? In
no.
Anger?
No.
I think I would be pretty belittled having said that.
I'm going to make sure Rochelle doesn't read this play so she can't add that to the arsenal when she's upset.
Marry your manhood mew! Very nice. We had a bit of a gender swappy role reversal where you were Goneril and Zoe was your husband, Albany.
Mm-hmm.
I was just so enthralled, I didn't even notice. You guys, this voice acting is bar none.
Oh, barred none?
Delicious. So let's move on to Act 5. Let's All get right. to the end of this play. Like I said, like we've both been saying, and like others have said, there are so many great speeches in this, it's kind of impossible to... get them all together.
You want to quote entire acts. Like, you kind of want to just sit there and go, okay, well, really, we have to include every line of this scene.
Yeah.
But
you know, there are, like,
they're there.
They don't have the...
In episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
They are all there. they don't have the famous speeches, the famous intro, the Richard III, or Hamlet, or Romeo and Juliet, when you hear them, you're like, oh, that's where I've heard that before. And because there's so much else surrounding them, they don't get performed like as soliloquies as much. Is there any particular one in Act 5 you would like to hear?
Well, there's... in Act 5, a lot of the speeches are sort of depend on... It's hard to take them out of context, like you're saying.
I would...
The entrance of Lear in the very, very last scene is always a really powerful speech.
So Lear enters holding his dead daughter, Cordelia, his beloved daughter, who has apparently been hanged in her cell or something like that.
Yeah, there's a... She's been killed. It's not... he says, my poor fool was hanged. Some critics say that refers to his daughter. Some claim it's an explanation for what happened to the actual fool, but...
So he comes, and he's obviously quoting the Allen Ginsberg play, which is one of the source texts, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably. I mean, I'm assuming so. He was a well-read person. So.
Allen Ginsberg, you know, the 1950s beat poet. Probably where it comes from. He comes in with Cordelia in his arms. Really tragic.
Yeah.
Everyone's dead at this time, pretty much. And...
Well, it's really interesting, too, because the Lear comes in, and the whole point is that the audience watching this play at the time would have expected some sort of happy-ish ending. I mean, yeah, some people are going to die along the course of the play, but some sort of reconciliation between Cordelia and Lear. And so when he takes her out, basically asking the question, is she really dead, or is this just a make-believe death scene, and then, well, we get to find out
and
the wonderful dramatic conclusion.
And Kent actually answers your very question with his line after that. So let's listen. It's me. Hopefully I redeem myself as Lear.
Howl, 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 oh, you are men of stones. Had I your tongues and eyes, I'd use them so that heaven's vault should crack. She is gone forever. I know when one is dead and when one lives. She's death as earth. Lend me a looking glass. If that her breath will mist or stain the stone, why, then she lives.
Is this the promised end or image of that horror?
Fall and cease.
This feather stirs. She lives. If it be so, it is a chance which does redeem all sorrows that ever I've felt.
Oh, but you, master.
Prithee away.
Tis noble Kent, your friend.
A plague upon you, murderers, traitors, all! I might have saved her. Now she's gone forever. Cordelia, Cordelia, stay a little. Ha! Huh? What is it thou sayest? Her voice was ever soft, gentle and low, an excellent thing in women. I killed the slave that was a-hanging thee.
'Tis true, my lords, he did.
Did I not, fellow? I have seen the day with my good-biting falchion. I would have made them skip. I am old now, and these same crosses spoil me. Who are you? Mine eyes are not, oh, the best. I'll tell you straight.
If fortune brag of two she loved and hated, one of them we behold.
This is a dull sight. Are you not Kent?
The same, your servant Kent. Where is your servant Caius?
He's a good fellow. I can tell you that. He'll strike, and quickly, too. He's dead and wrong.
No, my good lord. I am the very man.
I'll see that straight.
That from your first of difference and decay have followed your sad steps.
You are welcome hither.
Nor no man else. All cheerless, dark, and deadly. Your eldest daughters have foredone themselves and desperately are dead.
Aye, so I think.
He knows not where he knows not what he says, and vain it is that we present us to him.
Very bootless.
Enter a second messenger.
Edmund is dead, my lord!
That's but a trifle here. You lords and noble friends know our intent. What comfort to this great decay may come shall be applied. For us, we will resign during the life of this old majesty to him our absolute power.
To Edgar and Kent.
You, to your rights with boot and such addition as your honors have more than merited. All friends shall taste the wages of their virtue, and all foes the cup of their deservings. Oh, see, see.
And my poor fool is hanged. No, no, no life. Why should a dog, a horse, a rat have life, and thou no breath at all? Thou'lt come no more, never, 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 never. Pray you undo this button. Thank you, sir. Do you see this? Look on her. Look her lips. Look there. Look. Look there.
He dies.
He faints. My lord. My lord. Break heart, I prithee break. Look up, my lord.
So we let that one run a little bit because, oh, we just love ourselves so much and we have to listen to more and more. It was really fun to read. The thing that always gets me is he's this absolute power, absolute as a king, even though he's crazy, he's still the absolute. And I wonder, is there sort of a satirical side to Shakespeare where he's saying, because he lived in a time where the king was absolute authority, King James, this is a Jacobin play, as we've said before. And yet he's like, look at this absolute power, and it's a king, and he's crazy. I sometimes wonder if he was playing with that a little bit.
Yeah, well, he's not always flattering to kings.
And every ounce a king. I love it. Like, late in the play when he says that, it's like shivery.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty great.
And I'm not just saying that because I read it.
Although... it's a large part why I feel shivery when I mean.
Oh, stop it. Stop it. Yeah.
But it's, Lear's super interesting too, because he's kind of a character with no prehistory. We don't really have a good sense. I mean, maybe people back in the 17th century, Jacobin era, would have had a better idea, but we don't really have a sense of what he did beforehand, how he got this kingdom that he just sort of peacefully inherited, or... you know, was he known as a terror? It seems like maybe he was some sort of warrior or something, but...
yeah, formerly great in the
version... well, he killed the person who's hanging Cordelia, and he has that speech right at the beginning, which we didn't put in, where he tells Kent, stand not between the dragon and his wrath.
Yeah.
Which is like, you get a sense that if he really wanted to, like, he's... we say in French, yeah, not down, like, he could really...
yeah. The Kurosawa... version of this play, Ran, which is probably the best, has definitely taken
that. It will go up one day. It will go up one day.
It's coming, it's coming. But they've taken that because he's a warlord that has unified this country and or these kingdoms through terror, and then he's slowly going mad, and that's kind of... it's just such a fantastic movie, and it works on so many different levels. That was King Lear. We thank everybody. Oh, by the way, you're in for a special treat, listener, today, as you will get to hear the first male sonneteer. I won't say who it is, but I was very excited.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. But thanks for listening to any or all of these. You can go to bardbrawl.com and listen to them and leave a comment. A nice comment would be nice, or a... absolutely bitter, cruel comment, which we will also post up because...
yes, we don't edit comments based on their content, only their whether they were written by humans or not.
And I'm pretty sure if something came in, if any of the neo-Nazis that listen to the Bard Brawl decide to send in a comment with some of their political diatribes, I probably wouldn't post that.
There's a small chance that might not make it
on there. But you can also email us at bardbrawl@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle's @TheBardBrawl. We also have a Facebook page. We get to come back with a whole new play.
Or something else.
I think we need to go a little lighter. I think I need some lightness in my life because spring is here.
That's true. It's it'd be good to laugh a little bit as opposed to that sardonic, like,
just laughing at how horrible it is, which concerns me a little bit that we tend to laugh at that. But so it goes. So I thank you for all of us here at the Bard Brawl for listening. We will be with you shortly.
Thy bosom is endeared with all which I by lacking have supposed dead. And there reigns love in all love's loving parts, and all those friends which I thought buried. How many a holy and obsequious tear hath dear religious love stolen from mine eye, as interest of the dead which now appear, but things removed that hidden in thee lie. Thou art the grave where buried love doth live, hung with the trophies of my lovers gone, who all their parts of me to thee did give. That due of many is now is thine alone. Their images I loved, I view in thee, and thou, all they, hast all the all of me.